tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So, was it following, I think, on last week, right, where we were talking about the Noble Eightfold Path, and that's the path, you know, Buddha says, you know, there's many ways to describe the holy life, many ways to describe the practice, or what we're doing here. And one of the ways the Buddha did describe his teaching was that it's the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the kind of the training that takes a person to the end of suffering, the training that takes you to a complete liberation. And it starts with, you know, right view, right intention, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Or you can summarize into like a threefold path, which is sila, which is harmlessness, and then it goes to stillness, samadhi, and then panya, wisdom, right? So this ability to, you know, first establish the foundation, which is, you know, peace and stillness, not harming yourself, not harming others. And then when that happens, the mind becomes more still by itself. And then you use that kind of stillness, that calmness, to further focus the power by practicing meditation, by focusing the mind on one thing. And then when the mind is still, you can see clearly reality, or you can see clearly the Four Noble Truths. So clearly, where is it that we're making suffering for ourselves? And where is it that we're making suffering for others? And when you see clearly, the mind lets go. So it's not a, you know, a willpower, it's not a force, something you have to do. Letting go happens naturally, if you see clearly, right? So today I'm going to talk about right effort. What does that mean? Some people think, you know, right effort, it's people coming, and it's, you know, put in your 10 hours a day of meditation. You have, you know, kind of constantly sit and walk, you know, constantly bring the mind to the present moment, or constantly have an object of meditation in mind. Now, Buddha says, you know, kind of right effort is more general, more broad. Right effort, it can include sitting and walking meditation, can include focusing the mind in the present moment. But more broadly, it's having this mindfulness to see first, you know, what state of mind are you at. If it's wholesome, then you want to continue increase the wholesome states of mind. If it's unwholesome, you want to do anything to decrease the unwholesome state of mind, right? And also this ability to, you know, to work with the mind so that unwholesome state doesn't arise, and then to work with the mind, to direct the mind, kind of manage it, or, you know, not to kind of completely force it, but to establish the conditions where wholesome has a good opportunity to arise, and unwholesome does not have opportunity to arise. So that's right effort. It's not always, yeah, kind of this willpower of forcing the mind on the breath or on the meditation object all the time. Just the ability, this mindfulness, just to be aware where the mind is at the present moment. You always kind of check in, what is my mood? Where's my mind? And is it wholesome or unwholesome? It's going to lead me to more peace and clarity, or it's going to lead me away from that, to more distractions, more confusion, more attachment, yeah, and just that much. And then doing things just to kind of help direct it towards more wholesome states of mind, and then to stay there as often as you can. Yeah. So remember, it's just the path of practice. It's not always, it's understanding the conditions is having clarity. And the Buddha gave, you know, a good simile of the kind of the wet stick. If you're kind of immersed in sense desire, you're immersed, you know, if the stick is wet, no matter how hard you try to rub it, it's not going to produce fire. And it's the same. So when it's only when the stick is dry, then you rub it and produce fire. The same with the mind. Only when the mind has enough wholesomeness quality in it, that it becomes still by itself, and that you see clearly. So it's not always, you know, forcing the mind. So seeing the mind, you know, is it, you know, always kind of checking in, kind of treating your mind like another being, a person, a friend, not treating it like a prisoner. You're forcing it to do this, forcing it to do that all the time. So always checking in, how is my mind today? Where am I today? What do you want to do? You want to do a bit of sitting, walking, or just being still? Or having a cup of tea, or just taking a nap? So this doesn't have this kind of a kind of overriding agenda of how many hours you need to get in, how peaceful the mind should be when you're practicing. But there's this kind of gentleness, clarity, of tuning in, of kind of sensitivity, knowing where your mind is. If you had a busy week, it's like having a wet stick. It just takes time for the thing to become more dry. It takes time for the mind to be still. So not just kind of forced onto the meditation object, forced it onto the breath as soon as you get into the monastery or a meditation center. Just, you know, allowing things to kind of unravel, allowing things just to come, you know, become more still by itself. Yeah. And understanding these things take time. Understanding their causes and conditions for the mind. And your intention is only one part of the cause. Wanting peace is only one. You have to establish the conditions for peace to happen. And it is. It's, you know, first, it's helpful to have external peace. So when you go to a quiet place, you go to your meditation center. But then the internal stuff, the momentum of your thoughts, momentum of your emotions, momentum of what happened earlier in the week, doesn't disappear because you decide to sit down. So then there's, you know, the process of tuning in, just being aware. And that's the amazing power of mindfulness, of careful attention. You know, just, you know, the fact that you're sitting, tuning in, being aware of this movement of the mind, it becomes still by itself. Things start to slow down. As long as you just watch and allow things to slow down. Yeah. A good simile the Buddha gave is like, you know, the thoughts, the emotions, the ideas, the plans that we have in our mind are like waves, you know, on the water. And there's waves, it's hard to see things clearly. Right? You want to see clearly, so you have to wait for the waves to become more still. You have to wait for the water to become more flat, more even. And the water's there, you know, there's wave because there's wind. Winds are thoughts and ideas and thinking. And when there's no wind, the water becomes calm by itself. So a lot of time it's just waiting for things to kind of die down, become more still. But what most people do is in the sea, there's wave on the ocean, waves on the pond, they want it to become more still. They stick their hand in, they try to pat it down. And when they make more waves, so this idea of forcing the mind on the meditation, after forcing the mind on the breath or on the mantra or anything, it just makes it sometimes more restless, sometimes more unmalleable. So a lot of time it's just, like I said, mindfulness, sati, or can be defined as this kind of carefulness, this caring, gentleness of acceptance, of seeing the mind as like a little baby. Just kind of treating you with gentleness, with care, with lots of metta, that's kind of unconditional acceptance of love. You'll find that the mind begins to slow down, begins to open up by itself. And then, it becomes still. Because we're not pushing, shoving it. We're also not moving towards the future. We're not reliving the past. We're trying to just, you know, kind of allowing things to stay in the present moment. And also, it takes, and remember, samadhi, the preconditions for samadhi is happiness. Yeah. So just it's not from willpower, not from force that the mind becomes still. Mind becomes still when it's happy. So knowing what, we're trying to establish conditions for the mind to be happy. Sometimes you get into a mood of irritation, anger, you ask yourself, is this bringing me happiness? Fault finding about other people, remembering what, you know, what's gone wrong with your life, remember how the terrible things people have done to you, remember all the things that's wrong, gone wrong with the world. Is that bringing more happiness to my mind? Or just reflecting on all the good things that you can be grateful for, all the good things that have gone in, you know, that you can, that go into your life, the good things that's happening in the world. Yeah. And then see what happens, what that does to the mind. Obviously the practice is not, you know, it's about clarity. If we understand the world, it's what you focus on. You know, as practitioner, we know that the world is, you know, can be full of violence and injustice, obviously, full of dark forces and distractions. But we also know that if we focus on that too much, then the mind tends to be overwhelmed by those negative forces. And then we can't see clearly, and we can't, you know, it doesn't bring us happiness. It doesn't bring happiness to other people. It doesn't solve the problem as well. But knowing that we focus on the positive things of our life, the positive things in the world, the mind becomes more clear, more bright, more energetic. And from that basis, sense of well-being, some sense of clarity, we can be a force of goodness in the world. We can be a force that can change the world for the better. But it starts with, you know, kind of internal, starts with clearing the mind first, purifying our own mind first, to see clearly how we can play a part in the world, you know, with a positive ending. So it's always not a fixed path, and that's why the practice is so interesting. It's always checking in the present moment, you know, see where the mind is. If it has a lot of power, has a lot of brightness, a lot of stillness, then yeah, we can continue working, refining it by sitting and walking meditation. But sometimes you realize the mind is unwieldy, it's kind of grumpy, it doesn't want to meditate. And that's also, be open to that as well. It's like, okay, yeah, my mind's just too distracted. Just had a big argument with my boss or, you know, my partner, whatever. It's not the time to sit and watch the breath. So you know, it's time just to go for a walk. Just, you know, to allow things to settle down first. Yeah? And just to kind of check in the body. Usually we have an emotional state, anger, irritation, ill will, disappointment. There is a manifestation of that emotional state in the body somewhere. So we learn just to feel those things. Feel, what's it feel like to be disappointed, to be angry, to be annoyed in the body, and then kind of soothing, relaxing all the tightness and tension in the body first. You'll find that the mind will slowly calm down as well. Because we're not feeding it with more thinking, more thoughts and reactions to these mental states. So it's always kind of tuning in what's happening in the present moment. And then, like I said, it's not really complicated or difficult. Just knowing, you know, is my mind wholesome? And how do I continue onto this path? Or is it, you know, an unwholesome state? There's a bit of craving, a bit of wanting, a bit of yearning, a bit of complaining, and knowing it's all normal, right? Because remember, it's a path of clarity, a path of acceptance. We don't pretend we're more spiritual, more purified than we are. Sometimes, you know, as Buddhist practitioner, people have this idea that, oh, you should never have a bad thought, never have any negative thoughts in the mind. We always should think wonderful things. And then that, the problem that kind of makes you blind to half of the world. When you're blind to all the kind of the eternal things that's happening in our own mind, our own heart, because we don't want to admit that we can have terrible thoughts about our loved ones. We can be very childish at times, immature. We can be very, you know, yeah, very selfish at times. Yeah, but knowing these forces is about knowing, okay, selfishness feels like that. You know, knowing that, yeah, wanting feels like that. Not the end of the world, but not going to lead to, you know, long-term happiness as well. But it's also something that comes and goes. It's impermanent. It's not based on a thing. So you see your emotions come and go, the beautiful, the sublime, and the ugly, and the terrible. But not attaching to any of them. Allow them just to pass through your mind. After a while, but with clarity and acceptance. After a while, you'll see that the mind calms down by itself because there's not an agenda. It's not the pushing, oh, I want more of this, you know, or the pushing away, I don't like this, and the pulling, I want more of this. And if there was not the reaction, the mind stays calm by itself in the present moment. And you see clearly. And with, you know, and with the right mindfulness, because it takes, you know, this kind of carefulness, take tuning to the present moment, you'll find that you're happy. You're just naturally more mindful. Yeah. Sometimes when we're not mindful, we get obsessed about certain things. We get into a certain habit of thinking or looking at the world about certain things. And we don't notice anything around us. And that's a problem. And it feeds the delusion. But sometimes when we kind of step back and just allow things to come, to feel things, be more sensitive, you see more clearly, not just what we want out of the world, our own views and opinion, but we become more sensitive to what the needs and desires of people around us. And we can meet that in a wholesome, in a mature way. Yeah? But it's knowing ourselves first, then we can connect with others. And that's kind of the irony sometimes of the thing. And with the practice, you're always focusing inward, understanding your own emotions, where you're at. But with that, as the practice progresses, you have this incredible more sensitivity to understand. You understand your own mind, you understand others. And that's why sometimes people don't understand themselves, they don't understand other people. That's why the Ajahn Chah's famous saying is, you know one thing, you know everything else in the world. You know one piece of hair, you know every single piece of hair in the world. You don't need to go around looking so much outside. And that's where, you know, yeah, that can be a bit of a paradox. As you look inwards, you understand all the differences outside yourself. It's all the same thing. People, wherever they are, all beings, there's not human beings, animals, any beings that you see, you know, we're all very similar. We all want happiness, a sense of well-being. They want to avoid suffering. And it's just different types of things people want, different types of suffering they want to avoid. Once you understand that, you understand everything else. So the path of, you know, the practice is always, you know, going, you know, looking inward. But bringing, and the understanding that comes is understanding the world around us, the people around us. What do they want? Yeah, so with what right effort comes right mindfulness. Ability to attend in the present moment, to understand what's happening. And with that, the mind becomes more still by itself. Comes right concentration. Yeah, with the still mind, you see clearly. Understand the Four Noble Truths. Understand what, you know, what is it that brings suffering to yourself and others? And what is the cause of suffering? And also, if there's a cause, then there's the end of suffering. Causes comes and go. Yeah? You understand? Yeah. But to get there, it's the training to be done. Wanting to be free, wanting to be happy, it's just the beginning of the path. This thing come by itself. Next, you have to cultivate the conditions for those things. You have to cultivate the skills. Skills of understanding, skills of letting go, skills of acceptance. What anything, it's kind of muscles in the mind, it's just training. You go, you know, you want a healthy body, you go to the gym, you practice your muscles. Right? Lift weights. It's the same with the mind. When a healthy mind, a clear mind, you have to start training. Little by little as well. But it takes wise training. It's just not brute force. You know, hit the breath. In breath, out breath, in breath, out breath, in breath, out breath. No, it's more of a gentleness. Of waiting for the breath to come to you, okay? If it doesn't come, just stay in the present moment. Stay with the body. Happy just to be sitting still. Happy not at the office calling people, not having to do things, not having to wash dishes, not having to clean the house, not having to deal with